Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Megan Buchanan. And Megan is going to talk about her quest to climb Mount Everest. Now, Megan, it's been a while since we spoke. We did one other show, you know, back,
yes.
I think, in March or April. And, you know, when I saw your video the other day of you preparing, you know, to train for Everest, it just dawned on me. That's it. You know, you're perfect. I mean, you're such an inspiration. You know, not everybody climbs mountains, but everybody can learn from what you're doing as far as discipline and as far as, you know, being proud of what they're doing. So I think you're terrific. So let's go back to kind of discuss a little bit what we did in the first interview. You're not only an accomplished mountain climber, but you're also a rocket scientist. And you're also dyslexic. And I think, you know, what you're doing is, you know, absolutely phenomenal. So the first two questions is, when did you get started thinking you wanted to climb mountains?
Well, I have to tell you, all of it goes back to when I was a little girl. And, you know, I think we talked about it a little bit before last April, but I was diagnosed in second grade with dyslexia, and it was difficult for me. I had very loving, hands-on parents, which I'm so grateful for. My father was a brilliant, you know, Rhodes Scholar to MIT, and my brother and sister, so smart. And when I discovered I couldn't spell and was having trouble reading, it was really difficult for me. But the outdoors is something was almost like my therapy and my solace. And it was something my dad loved too. And it was kind of our thing. And so as a little girl, of course, you know, would go in his backpack, you know, when he would hike, but as I was able to go with him, we would go all day. And it was just really our special thing together. And I felt normal in nature. And
wow.
Wasn't told I can't do it, wasn't told, you know, all these things. So as a little girl, that was big for me. So it was just a lifestyle of being outdoors a lot. But it wasn't until I had a severe snowboard accident in Vail, Colorado, where I live. I shattered my femur, broke the head completely off it, ripped the muscles off. It was such a severe accident. I pretty much when I woke up after rescue and emergency surgery, the doctor said, you know, first of all, you're lucky to be alive. Second of all, you'll probably have a wheelchair or a cane the rest of your life. And I was about, I was 36 years old, and I had climbed Kilimanjaro with my father before that, and Everest Base Camp. And it was just being in Colorado in the 14ers were just a part of my life. But that right there was where I really had to dig deep. And it was a 2-year recovery because they put a 14-inch rod down the center of my femur. But after a year and a half, I still couldn't walk upstairs without a cane and using a railing. It turns out I was allergic to the titanium in my leg. So at a year and a half, then I had to have another surgery to take it out. But I was so focused on rehab and training and never giving up just to be able to walk again that once that titanium was out, I felt so much better. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do Everest Base Camp in 6 months. And after a year and a half of not being able to walk upstairs, within a month of having the titanium out, I could walk upstairs. And within 6 months, I did Everest Base Camp. And the fire was just lit in my belly here. I couldn't believe how mentally strong I was after that accident that at that point I'm like, I'm going to go back and do Kilimanjaro again. So did that again. And at that point I was like, wow, you know what? I love this so much. I'm going to go try Aconcagua. So I did that. And it was actually in Aconcagua where I met this amazing girl. She was 29 years old and that was her seventh summit. And I was like, when on earth did you do Everest? She did Everest when she was 19, but she was a lineage of this famous mountain climber. So it was like a sponsored event. And she just chatted with me and she was like, how was that for you? And I'm like, well, I don't want to say it was easy, but it was great. And she's like, oh, heck, you can do it. So she's like, go do Denali and then go do Everest. And so I actually did Elbrus, which is in Russia, one of the seven summits. And then I did Denali summer before last. And I had learned like through positive strength, mental strength, that grit inside to never give up. I felt so strong, even though Denali was extremely difficult, but got through it. And that was in July. And then I was accepted onto a team for Everest the very next year, which was 2020. And I went full bore into it. But 2 weeks before I was to fly to Nepal, COVID came down hard and Nepal closed their climbing season for everyone. So I had everything ready to go. But, you know, now that we've had time since COVID has hit, I look at it, I was disappointed, but not devastated because I knew that I'd have another opportunity to go. And because of all, and we've talked about this briefly, all the devastation that has happened this year, I didn't stay sad long. I got right back up and decided to start training for something else because I knew that my problems were again, disappointments. They were not devastation.
Like I just said, not everybody is cut out to be a mountain climber, but everybody can learn. Everybody can learn from you, from your, like you say, grit. And it's very important, you know, especially at this time when there's so much sorrow and, you know, devastation, to just focus on something positive and something creative. And what I want to do, over the course of your training for Everest, and then once you get to Everest, and then once you get back, is to, you know, talk about your experience and how it's transformed your life in some way. And I think by doing that, you could be an inspiration to so many more people. So I'm looking at, you know, conversations with you for maybe a year, because you're going to do a couple of other summits after Everest, right?
Yeah, so my full goal is the seven summits. I'll be as far as I know, I've done a lot of research, so if anyone hears this but they know otherwise, let me know. But I'll be the first rocket scientist, aerospace engineer to do the seven summits, and then I'm going to go on. And so I'll do Everest in the spring, hopefully, and then Karzan's Pyramid in August, and then I will do Mount Vinson in Antarctica next December. But I will also be doing the South Pole, piggybacked onto Vincent, and then I will go in spring 2022 and do the North Pole, the last degree trek. So that's called the Explorer's Grand Slam. And I think there's like 15 to 20 women who've ever done it. And I'd love to go on and do the Adventurer's Grand Slam, but to go back to what you were saying, you are so right. And you've hit it on the head with, you don't have to climb Everest to use grit. And let me, grit is an acronym that I've come up with, is what I've figured out are the tools to make it through long duration challenge. And it's GGRIT, gratitude, growth, resilience, integrity, and tenacity. And we can talk about those tools like over the next year and how to apply them. And they start as simple as waking up every day. And the first one is gratitude. It all starts with gratitude because, in my opinion, any situation you're in, and it can be a really devastating situation, if you can find one thing you're grateful for at that moment, that starts to change your mindset. And so whether it's mountain climbing, whether it's a learning disability, a devastating injury, loss of loved ones, if you can focus on the things you can control and let go of the things you can't, and focus on what you can be grateful for, to me, that is such an amazing key to keeping that positivity and moving forward to reach whatever goal you've got.
I think the last time we spoke, I had told you that I do stairs as a form of exercise.
Yeah.
And so this is the beginning of 2021.
Yes.
My goal for this year is to climb 57,000 stairs throughout the year. That is the equivalent of climbing Mount Everest. And it's an attainable goal. It's not going to break my back or anything, but, I think what I want to do with my conversations with you is for people to understand that it's okay to get out of your comfort zone, because when you get out of your comfort zone, you feel like you accomplished something. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. And that's part of one of the tools really is resilience and tenacity. And those two really do speak about pushing yourself outside the comfort zone. And when I go talk to kids especially, I think there's so much pressure on kids to never mess up and be perfect. And it's hard for them to understand it's okay to fail. And so I go out and tell them right away, if you're not failing, you're not pushing yourself. I'm think about skiing. And if you're just always on the bunny slope, you're not going to fall, but you're never going to get better. And so, think about the times you fell. Well, you pushed yourself and you got better the next time. So I am, there's all these theories about, the falling into failure, but I totally agree. I mean, I have fallen so many times. I talk to especially high school and college kids too. I failed calculus too, probably two or three times because of my dyslexia. But I wanted it so bad. I wanted to be an engineer, and I kept at it. And if I gave up the first time I failed, I wouldn't be here. And so it is just the smallest little things, pushing yourself to get back up. Fall down 7 times, get up 8. That's all you need to do. So I totally, and having that resilience and that tenacity, and that is something that's built over time. It doesn't happen overnight. So when people say, how are you training for Everest? My first answer is oh my God, well, I'm 46 right now. So it's been 46 years of training, because it is so much that mental stamina to keep getting up and keep going and not let little worries, knowing your own body, knowing that your body can push itself past where your mind thinks it can. And those are a accumulation of life lessons that come together that give you that. So it starts somewhere. It starts small.
But I think people, and I don't know, I want to say this country, maybe it's a universal thing that, the body has certain limitations, and people, they think the body has certain limitations, and people are afraid to go past that limitation. I think what you do can make people understand there's really no limitation to just keep going.
The limitation is the your mental thought. Of course there are actual limitations in your human body. But And it's interesting too. I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks with a lot of mountaineers, and they talk about when you, like, what is that point where your body breaks? And unfortunately you do kind of, you do find it once in a while with fatigue, and some people, you know, mountaineering is not a, it has a percentage of danger for sure. But like I was snowshoeing up a ski mountain yesterday training, and there was a woman just took her skis off, just sitting off to the side of a cat track. And I was like, are you okay? Do you need anything? And she was just, you know, very tired. And she's like, do you know where the bottom is? I'm like, you've got about a quarter mile. You're almost there. And she's trying to use her cell phone and she couldn't get it to work. And I'm like, well, do you want me to carry your skis up to the next lodge? I'll walk with you. No. And she was whining. And she said, I need to get a hold of ski patrol because my legs are shot and I just want to ride down. And that right there was a perfect example of a person who does not know, doesn't have any idea of the strength she actually has within her. And I, after kindly, I said, please do not call ski patrol to come give you a ride because you're tired. And I said, I personally have shattered my femur in the back bowls. Those are the people ski patrol need to have their time spent on. And I said, I'm like, you can do this. And I'm like, you can do this. You feel tired. Your body will keep going. Just coast down. Get your skis on. Coast down and think of how proud you'll be of yourself when you do it. Push. You can do this. And she gave me this look like, ah, oh, darn you. But she got up and she went. And I hope, I was just like, man, I hope she gets to the bottom and thinks, wow, you know, that was silly of me. I really could do this. And the next time she does the whole run. Those are the tiny little things in your life that you can take lesson to. And you can make that decision right there of like, no, you know what? I'm going to do this last quarter mile. And then the next time you go out, you're set to push yourself even further. So taking Mount Everest as a whole and saying, could I ever do Mount Everest? Thinking like me 15 years ago, I had no interest in it. I didn't really think about it. But that's because I have done so much little work to push myself, push myself, push myself. Now it's attainable to me. And it starts with that, those little things like put your skis back on, suck it up and go down the hill. Toughen up a little.
Now I think it was in our last conversation, you were saying that you have to carry stuff on your back and push stuff. And you said it could be up to 100 pounds. When you're doing an incline, having that much weight and pulling that much weight, that's really, really challenging, right?
Yeah, so that's Denali. And that is what makes Denali of the Seven Summits a really special mountain. And I say special, like the South, bless her heart. It makes it, you know, it's interesting. I can't wait to be done with Everest to be able to say what my opinion is. There's a lot of controversy as which one's harder, Denali or Everest. And they're harder for different reasons. But what's interesting about Denali is it is unsupported. I mean, you, of course, I went with a guiding company and you're in rope teams, but you all carry all the group gear, which are the tents, you know, the fuel, the food, the waste. Denali, you have to carry all your human waste back out as well, plus your own gear. So you have a huge pack and you are pulling a sled behind you for most of the mountain until about 14,000 feet. And then from there you leave your lower mountain gear and you'll go with the heavy pack up top, but you're not pulling a sled anymore. But it will break people mentally and physically. And there were moments too where in every mountain there's moments where I'm like, I chose to do this. Why am I doing this? But it's so rewarding and amazing to push yourself through that and get through the other side. And the teamwork, oh my gosh. And that's something I really talk to companies about, how mountaineering speaks to you about teamwork. It is not, and most of the times, now there are amazing mountaineers who will do these amazing solo summits, and I am not there. I'm more into teamwork stuff, but you are responsible for each other and roped up to each other. and you become close very fast, and this camaraderie. And that is so rewarding on the mountain as well. It kind of helps make up for the difficulty and the pain that you experience during the day. Then sitting down, warming up and sharing stories with the crew that you're with just is this amazing special experience as well.
So you've done 4 already and you're working on your last 3. Every climb that you've done, what's the percentage of women to men?
Excellent question. And that, unfortunately, is related, too, to the difficulty of the mountain. I think that here in, 2020, 2021, I think that mountaineering, so many more women are starting to do it. I think for the general population, it is hard to do the 7 summits because it takes a lot of money and a lot of time. And most women now, over half our workforce are women. I do a lot of STEM studies. But also, majority of the time, women are also still the main providers and caregivers to children. And so a lot of times you will have, and this is not all, but, a lot of guys who are mountaineers already, they marry someone and the partner knows that they're already a mountaineer. This is part of their lifestyle. But I think for a lot of women, they've just been in a different category where they still stay home for the kids, or you get to a point, I don't have kids. And I often think about this too. If I had kids, I don't know that I'd be doing this. I don't know that I would be. I don't know that I would risk so much if I had a kid to take care of. And so this is something I think about a lot. But I think the younger you are that you get exposed to it as a female, the more likely you are to keep doing it. And that's like math and science as well. Exposed to it early, the more likely you are to stick with it and do it. And then there's a lot of amazing programs out there and a lot of mountaineering companies that are really putting money into trying to encourage women, different minorities, to get more into mountaineering. So I'm so sorry, I get very passionate about this, but to answer your question, so Kilimanjaro, lots of females on the trek. It is, and if anyone's interested in starting the 7 summits, start with Kilimanjaro. It is amazing. It is magical. It's attainable. You can do it. And then go on safari or whatever after. It's really, really, it's a great gateway into the 7 summits. Aconcagua, I had, I think, 8 people on my team and then 2 guides. And there were actually 3 of us female. And that was a hairy, hairy summit. And only 3 of us from my group and then 1 other person from a different group summited that day. Like 40 started, only 4 of us summited. But it was another female and myself were 2 of those 4. And then Elbrus was – and Elbrus in Russia is also another. It's a quicker one. It's beautiful. That was actually probably 25% women on the mountain. Denali, far less women, far less. But the guiding company I went with RMI, I purposely chose they had 8 different Denali trips that season, 7 or 8. I chose the one that had a female guide in it because I really that was getting up to another level to me. And I really had some specific questions. I wanted her advice. And oh my gosh, shout out to Jenny. Jenny, you are one of the most awesome women I know. Like this, she taught me so much. But far less. And so for Everest, I don't know all my teammates yet. But definitely we were highly vetted and interviewed. But I heard a rumor that they have several females that have been interested over the years and they're trying to put us all into one group, which I'm really excited about. So, but definitely far less women on Everest. Cause again, you're gone for 2 months. And if you didn't grow up doing it and have the passion for it, then why are you going to spend that kind of time and money doing it? So I just, you know, I hope to encourage more women to get involved and start doing, because it is extremely rewarding, the most amazing feeling.
The one thing you don't have to worry about is dieting. You burn off enough calories that you have to eat more than the average person.
Oh,
right?
God, you can't, like, yeah, kind of like above 17,000 feet, like, you seriously cannot intake enough calories. It is, I mean, that's like, okay, so on Denali, we were at 19,000 foot camp, and we had had great weather up until then, but a storm came in, and we were in our tents for 5 days. And just waiting for a window to go for summit. But 5 days, and my tent mate started getting really antsy. And, well, I don't know, are the guides, you know, we should just go. And they're starting to question the guides, which I was like, uh-uh, they know their stuff. Yeah, Mike Hogan was amazing. He's our lead guide. He's done Denali like 15 times. I'm like, that guy knows what he's doing. Anyway, I was so happy. For 5 days in my negative 40 degree sleeping bag, I got to read and I got to eat whatever I wanted all day long. I was eating gummy bears, chocolate, and I was like, this is a vacation. I get to sleep, read, and eat. Wow. This is awesome. So again, wow. Like, talk about keeping that positive attitude. But yes, you cannot get enough calories in you. And so it is just, you know, a lot of people, you know, with altitude really do have problems too. They have loss of appetite. They, you know, they can't sleep. I think another reason I love this so much is I kind of have what's called the gene, and I got it from my dad, where my body just does really well with altitude. So I sleep, I eat, I don't have lack of appetite, and that really helps me. Because if you don't eat and you're not taking calories in, you're going to walk. You're not going to make it. So another little advantage there, but yeah.
We just have about a minute left. Yeah. So tell everybody about the group you created, Grit.
Yeah. So I was trying to think of what platform, and it was really after my leg injury, and I just was so fired up about sharing with other people how to stay positive. And I think it was some, you know, friends are like, wow, you should really, like, you should talk to people, you should do some talks. So I started with high schools and little kids about, you know, overcoming learning disabilities or accidents, and the pictures are always awesome. Kids really love that. But then I really started figuring out more in my career as a female in engineering, this was a bigger lesson. And so GRIT is what I came up with of what is the common factor between all these challenges or just life that I've gone through. And it's these tools and attributes that I truly feel you practice those and you can get through anything. It is where your Everest expedition you've been training for your whole life and all your money, and you've signed your power of attorney over, and you've signed the form that says what you want done with your body if you die on the mountain. It was canceled. I was bummed for about 36 hours and then I was over it, because I knew, I knew I couldn't change it. I couldn't do anything about it. So let's start using this energy towards something else positive. And I practiced it so many times, I was able to jump right into that. I would love to be able to help others get through that and figure that out for themselves in their own life.
So yeah. Megan, on our next conversation, let's talk a little bit about GRIT, because our time is up. So
I would love
you have been listening to Megan Buchanan. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is Women Who Inspire, and if you like this show, like us on Facebook. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Megan. Have a great day.
Thank you,
Cynthia. Have a great
Happy New Year.